Good evening and welcome to this special 60-minute edition of Left, Right and Center. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. Two stories that we are focusing on today. Story number one, it is something which has been pinching the Aam Aadmi for a very long time. Consistently over a fortnight, the prices of petrol, diesel, PNG, that is piped natural gas, CNG, that is compressed natural gas, or anything to do with petroleum products is increasing. And as a cascading effect, the price of vegetables, fruits, everything is increasing. This is pinching and hurting the Aam Aadmi. And what hurt them even more, at least of those who spoke to us, why is the government not listening to us? Now it appears, finally this seems to be pinching the government as well. But what is the cause of that pinch? Is it political? Remember, 5 state assembly elections are due in February and March 2022. And if this is the phenomenon and if it keeps going on exactly in this trajectory, is this going to politically hurt the dispensation? And is that the reason why the central government feels, boss, we've got to act? That's story number one. Story number two on the show, 1 billion doses strong. That is where we are about to reach, maybe tomorrow, maybe day after. But what are the challenges? Yes, this is a great moment of celebration. But what really are the big challenges ahead? We have to celebrate, all right. But we have to be aware of all the challenges as well. And there are many. We'll highlight a few on this program. Before we go any further, let's quickly take a look at this presentation that we've prepared on price rise and how it's pinching not just the Aam Aadmi, but now, finally, the government as well.
Samajwadi Party workers protesting, attacking the BJP government in Lucknow against the steep hike in LPG or cooking gas cylinders, which are up nearly 200 rupees this year, as well as petrol and diesel prices, which are at a record high. They are not alone. Every single opposition party have been protesting, and even within the BJP, the pressure is mounting to give relief to the consumers. Top government sources have indicated the government is working actively and engaging with the finance ministry to try and bring down the prices of petroleum products. They want both the center as well as states together to reduce prices. They also indicate that they are actively trying to leverage India's position of being the world's third largest consumer to reduce international prices of crude and would be happy at a basket of 70 per dollar rather than the present 85 per barrel. Sources say talks are on with oil companies to ensure LPG prices are compensated.
With elections around the corner, the political pressure is mounting and the government is working at some way forward to try and reduce the burden of the common man before they go to vote early next year. In New Delhi, Sunil Prabhu, NDTV.
So there is one political side of the argument that we are going to speak to right now as we get more guests. Reena Gupta, spokesperson of the Aam Aadmi Party. We have Mr. Gurdeep Singh Sappal, national spokesperson of the Congress Party, and Ghanshyam Tiwari, spokesperson of the Samajwadi Party. In just a short moment, we'll have Mr. Alok Vats, leader of the BJP, and Rajat Sethi, economist and a political analyst, views lean towards the government. They're also going to join us in just a short moment. But Mr. Sappal, to you first. It seems that now within the government and even some pro-government analysts finally realize, or pro-government commentators or pro-government sympathizers all seem to realize that this is not going to help the government. This has now reached a point where it is pinching the Aam Aadmi. Do you think that this realization is largely dictated by the political outcome in the upcoming elections, or generally a realization to have some ruth towards the Aam Aadmi?
Sanket, this is just window dressing. Let us not forget this is coming only days after increase in gas prices by 62%, where and two companies stand to benefit from it. It comes only weeks after the entire media campaign was carried out how BJP is going to bring petrol diesel under GST. And in last GST council meeting, you remember before that, a full campaign was made out. So BJP, instead of giving the relief, it's in power in center, it is in power with its allies in almost 20 states. Nothing stops BJP from lowering the taxes. So instead of lowering the taxes, every few days, Every few days, it carries out a campaign which gives an impression that the Prime Minister or BJP is worried about common man. But actually what they've done in last few days, increased the prices of the gas which is mined in India by 62%. Do you think that will not pass on to people? You are looking for cheaper basket elsewhere. You are negotiating with companies to compensate for this price rise, which in first place you allowed to happen. So this is all window dressing. The government is not at all concerned with the prices. It is feeling the pinch. It is feeling the pinch, but nothing.
No,
can
but then you know the one moment. Mr. Ghanshyam Tiwari, you see what the government... Actually, let me, if Mr. Tiwari, if you allow me, I would like to ask this question of Ms. Reena Gupta. Ms. Gupta, what the government seems to propose, or at least will propose from here on, is that state as well as the centre share the burden if there has to be some relief which needs to be passed on to the consumers, then both the centre and the state will have to share the burden of letting go of the taxes. It's not like only the center taxes petrol and diesel. States do it too.
Sanket, 65 to 70% of the petrol and diesel price actually goes to the center. There's hardly 30% which comes to the state. And since the time the BJP government has come to power, the various finance commissions have said that they have decreased the pool of shareable taxes, because they've increased surcharges and cesses. So what they do is they're actually collecting more and more from the common people of the country and sharing very little with the states. So how can you then expect the states to further reduce the, the taxes on fuel? And Sanket, if you look at, I'll give you one more statistic. In 2014, the center used to get only 14% of the retail price of petrol. And today it gets 32% of the retail price of petrol. So the central government is taking more and more money, whether it's from fuel or anything else, and giving very little to the state. Now, point number two is also, where is all this money going? Because kiska vikas ho raha hai, kab se bola ja raha hai ki desh ka vikas ho raha hai, iske liye aap jyada tax dijiye. We have fallen miserably low in the hunger index. So this money is not even going back to the common people from where this money is coming. And as any economist or any public policy person will tell you that, this taxation fuel is pervasive taxation because it hits the common person disproportionately higher. And you can already see that the prices of fuel, of vegetables and fruits and everything else, edible oil, everything is going up both in the national capital and in the whole country. Okay. So, you're hitting the common.
Okay, so from what I gather, from what you're saying, Ms. Gupta, I gather from what you're saying that if taxes have been collected disproportionately, then the relaxation in the taxes should also be proportionate or commensurate to the taxes collected, which means the center must reduce taxes more than the states because it collected more taxes in the first place. Rajat Sethi, don't you think that's only fair?
I want to say one line, Sanket, on this. Just one line.
This is not a state versus center issue. We are all part of same country and we are equal stakeholders in the developmental story. But we need to keep in mind a couple of things here. If the center goes out and unilaterally reduces the excise duty, which by the way is around 32 rupees per liter, and what madam was mentioning was actually wrong, factually wrong. Delhi, for instance, has a 30% VAT rate on the price of fuel, which comes to the approximate levels of 23 to 24 rupees. So it is not 70-30 ratio. What the center's possible answer to this conundrum would be that if the center gives a subsidy of like 3 or 4 or 5 rupees, that should be passed on to the end consumer. It shouldn't be like that the certain state governments keep their VAT rate consistent or even increase their VAT rate.
No, but then Mr. Sethi, you are imagining this situation because nothing of this has actually happened. It's not like the center has reduced its central excise share.
A clear example, Sanket.
To say that when we do, it should be passed on to the people and states must not pocket it.
Sanket.
See, there is a clear a reason why the central government might think so. Is because several GST round discussions around petrol, bringing petrol and other fuel products under GST regime has been stymied by the states. the states are not willing to go ahead and give away the ability to increase the VAT at their whims, that opportportunity shouldn't go to the center. So what they have done is
I will ask that question of the various representatives of the state government also. Mr. Alok Vats is also with us. I'll come back to you, Mr. Sethi. I'll come back to you. One moment. I'll come back to you. Let me also get in the first comment from first comment from Mr. Alok Vats. Mr. Vats, you tell me that right now we are hearing from central government sources that you will speak to oil producing nations. You will speak to all those nations who are controlling the prices. You will also be speaking to state governments and coordinating with them that the lowering of the taxes must be uniform so that the benefit can be passed on to the people. Don't you think that you are very late in having this realization? Now, picture this. Had you had this realization 15, 20 days ago, we would have actually seen some benefits right now. It's not like you will talk to some foreign country and they will dramatically reduce their rates and you will dramatically pass on that benefit to the consumers. This process is going to take time. Sanket, why did the government wait for so long?
Sanket, it's better late than never. But as you said, 10, 15 days ago, it would have happened. So prices wouldn't have come down drastically within 15 days of talking. But there are many other factors which have not allowed us to, you know, keep the price down, you know, by lowering the excise and the cess. Because you see, there have been COVID pressures, then there have been global crude price increasing rapidly, the various factors, and then these oil bonds produced by Congress regime in 2014, where they kept the prices stable. Now the maturance has come of those 10,000 crore is only the interest part. Even if you redeem it, you redeem it only by 3,500 crores. So all these, and then there have been other pressures on the government, like the Pradhan Mantri Garib Kalyan Yojana, where food grains.
No, one moment, Mr. Vats. Can I please come in here? My point is that the government realizes that these are the things we can do now. Surely these were options available to a government with all the wisdom at its disposal earlier as well. So you would have had a head start. In fact, it would not have escalated to a point. See, coming in now, or at least thinking about it now, mulling about these options now, means that you will only be able to act a few weeks from now.
Sanket, where is the guarantee that if you go and plead to oil producing nations to reduce the price, that they will listen to you and lower the prices? It's just we are just trying to do that. And the state governments, we have been telling them since long to bring it in under VAT. But because of the resistance from the state governments, this exercise is not completed.
No, you mean GST. Not VAT, GST, you meant GST. GST.
Sorry, GST.
To get it in the ambit of GST.
Yeah. Now it's GST, sorry. So they have been resisting it. So all these things have led. Now we are.
No, but then states have their own reason. States, we've had this debate where states come out and say this is also our only source of revenue. Just like you are milking this cow, we are also milking this cow for taxes. We also need revenues. You're sitting over our share of the GST. You're not sharing it with states.
How do states run their governments?
What is logical for you is logical for the states as well. That's the argument.
But the main factor with the center is their helplessness. Because of the impact of COVID too, then the exchange rate variations from 70 to it went to 74 point something dollar per dollar, and then global crude oil prices rising, and then lastly a major player was the oil bond issued by the Congress regime, which is now come up for maturity. And it has to be paid. It is being paid.
Okay. This oil bond, issue has been going on for a very long time.
No, but it's a
The Congress
issue.
Turns around
1.4 lakh crore oil bonds were issued by them.
Congress turns around and says that the share of paying the oil bonds is only 3% of the total taxes that you have collected. Okay, we'll come back to you. Ghanshyam Tiwari, I want to come to you now. Let's talk solutions. First of all, do you feel that the government realized that there is a problem very late? And now, having realized, what exactly should the government be doing?
Good evening, Sanket, to the viewers, to you and my fellow co-panelists. Let me just say first thing first. I, you, or anyone on this panel and the people of India do not know why the government is keeping the petrol prices high. There is no political logic by their own standards. If a prime minister campaigns for multiple years that bahut hui petrol diesel ki maar ab ki baar Modi sarkar, and when they had the opportunity to reduce the prices and give the benefits to people, they did not. So there is a concerted effort. I will say it's a conspiracy against the common man by BJP government. One must ask who benefits from conspiracy. We know their crony capitalists do benefit. We know BJP as a party has doubles its income every 2 years. The second is the pressure of media, opposition and people at large. That pressure is not working. So I'm not here to tell a solution to a government that is dictatorial and is not ready to listen, and that it has its own designs on why it wants to steal the money of common man. As far as the international prices are concerned, oil bonds are concerned, GST, the role of states is concerned, this is all false logic. This is a false logic given by spokespersons who do not know the mind of their own government. For example, let's talk GST and state prices, states talking about GST. In March 2021, Sushil Modi gave a long interview, and he also spoke in Rajya Sabha, and he spoke about how for next 10 years, petrol prices will not come under GST. He was a chairman of GST Council. He was a finance minister of a state ruled by BJP. So clearly, the BJP has its mind very clear that they will never bring petrol diesel prices under GST. Yes, they will use it on television debates and blame the states that this is VAT or something like that. Did any states ask the center to continuously increase and not pass the benefit? No. They continuously increase, and because of their increase, some states are benefiting. But the entire decision making is with the state. There's only with the center. There's only one thing that I can think about.
Okay.
That is, Prime Minister of India, in his crude messaging of Harvard versus hard work, has very crude understanding of economics. So this is a rent-seeking economics. The only way this government, which is not inventive, that is not innovative on economic front, the only way it can make some money to run the country is, and then say they are doing it for the poor, is by...
Okay, so you're saying basically this is a lazy method of tax collection. One moment, let me take that to Rajat Sethi and then Ms. Reena Gupta. Rajat Sethi, an allegation is that this is a lazy form of tax collection, that you tax petrol and diesel heavily, and then after that you blame it on international markets, that what to do, you know, exchange rate is such, the cost of the crude oil is such that we can't do much. How would you respond to this allegation of the government?
Sanket, this is, I'll give
as far as ideation on revenue shoring.
I'll give a non-political answer to this because it doesn't merit political bickering. It's a serious topic and it affects everybody. Please understand that budget is an open book. India's budget is presented every year. All the possible sources of revenue and everything, every single head is accounted for. And every single head, even on the expense sheet, is accounted for. That balance sheet is present before everybody to have a look at. Now, if you reduce the excise duty, which, by the way, has remained consistent at 32 rupees throughout the past, this at least this fiscal year, we know exactly what are the heads under which it is going to be spent. If that goes down, if the excise collection goes down, there will be certain public-oriented programs which will get impacted. Now, how do you shore up that delta, that gap that is there if you reduce the excise duty, which potentially the government will have to look up to?
No, but that's exactly the point, which is why the government faces allegations that it has been very lazy as far as its structuring of tax collection is concerned. That you have only thought of petrol and diesel.
No, Sanket, historically what has happened is every single government, including all possible central government's permutations that we have seen, has put one or the other kind of cess to do an easy, lazy job of balancing the budget. Every government has done that.
34 rupees per litre of central excise.
No, so please understand, government can today come out and say they can reduce and make it zero. That subsidy portion will have to be levied by the taxpayers at the end of the day. Somebody has to foot the bill that is laid out in the parliament.
Okay, so it'll be a vicious cycle. But you tell me something, Alok Watts, I want to come back to you. I get your point. You're saying that somewhere if you subsidize, it is the people who are going to have to pay for the subsidy. One moment. Alok Watts, I want to come to you now. So why is it that now the government feels the need? One moment. Alok Watts, why is it that now the government feels the need to say that center and states must reduce prices together? Of course, they're talking about taxes because you can't reduce the price of petrol, no. So it has to be the share of taxes. Why do sources in the government say that talks with finance ministry are going on for cut in prices? That oil companies should ensure that LPG prices are compensated? That diesel, petrol, LPG, cooking gas price have spiraled in the recent weeks, and that is why we must reach out to Saudi Arabia, Russia, etc. to reduce prices? I mean, sure, if this is the logic, then this solution which is being offered right now should not be offered.
The chief reason is that the COVID-2 impact and the type of expenses that were being made has also been stabilized or rather controlled and come down. And also the welfare schemes like Pradhan Mantri Garib Kalyan Yojana, the 8-month
food program. But Mr. Vats, you now realize that it is getting out of hand, don't you? Hand on heart, you tell me, you are from Uttar Pradesh. Do you not realize that in a poll-bound state like UP, if you have a projection and on Friday we carried out a projection where we said at this rate petrol will touch 135 rupees.
The welfare schemes that were going on vis-a-vis health or agriculture or the amount of money, 1 lakh crore has gone into the...
No, Mr. Vats, my question is different. Do you or do you not politically realize that petrol and diesel at this moment runs the risk of becoming the single biggest issue of concern in poll-bound states? By what if it touches if it continues this way, it will touch 135.
People of India, for any reason, if there is a price rise, on no matter of onion in price increase, they change the government. So, you see, forget that. But the real thing is that what we got, Virasat mein, what we got from the Congress was a totally better economy, which has to be now made to rise. And for there, some hard decisions have to be taken, and where sometimes we are helpless. See, do we pay the oil-bound companies?
Okay, my point is from here on. What happens? You know, this oil-bound political fight, as Rajat Sethi was saying, is going to go on and on. You tell me solutions. Reena Gupta as well as Ghanshyam Tiwari, let's talk solutions from here on.
Which
government did what and state, center? Can this collectively... Yes.
Can I come in?
First, Reena Gupta, please.
Sanket, I don't know who's advising or not advising this government. They have failed on every policy front. Inflation is high. Unemployment is at a 30-year high. We are, you know, the lowest 15 in the global hunger index.
No, but from here on, Ms. Reena Gupta, as a representative of a government in power in a state, what happens from here on?
How will you tell
the people all of this?
Sanket, you know, every government collects taxes. And how you spend those taxes tells of, you know, your niti and your niyat. So the taxation of this government, this is totally perverse taxation. You have to figure out a way that the money actually reaches the common people.
Sure.
In this, you know, right now, in the times of COVID and high unemployment, if you continue to have such high prices of fuel, then it leads to high prices of commodities. And that is the reason why we see such high levels of hunger in the country. I mean, this is kiska vikas ho raha hai desh mein, ye samajh mein nahi aa raha hai.
Okay, Mr. Sapal. Yes.
I've been waiting because so many things have been said about Congress party. First of all, I'll tell Alokji ki Prime Minister only needs to talk to Finance Minister and take this issue in next GST Council. GST Council, Alokji, has 1/3 votes of center, 2/3 votes of state. And 21 states are ruled by BJP and 3 Congress-ruled states have already written and already publicly expressed that they are in favor of bringing petrol diesel under GST. So please, there is no question of lack of support. There are enough votes. In fact, only BJP has enough vote. But even if you add Congress vote, that will work. Number 2, please tell me, you talk of Virasat. You talk of Virasat, very good. Please tell me why the production of crude oil, domestic crude oil, has fallen by 1/3 in last 7 years after you came to power. We are talking of petrol prices elsewhere in the world without even discussing the fact that 53 lakh metric ton of crude oil domestically produced has fallen. That production has fallen from 23.5%. The contribution to petroleum basket, domestic contribution, has come down to 15.8%. Why? Okay. Why have you stopped the exploration of oil wells? You have finished ONGC. You have finished the budget of exploration of new oil wells. And you are saying that this is the Virasat. Virasat was self-reliant. Aatmanirbhar was the Virasat.
Okay.
You talk of oil bonds. What about 1 lakh odd rupees you are talking about? Do you know in last 7 years you have added 83 lakh crore as debt to this country?
83 lakh crore. So tomorrow you will say that we send 10 rupees per liter petrol.
Okay, Mr. Sapal, you made the political arguments. My only...
It's not political. I have very clearly said why the domestic production has gone down. Please, Alokji, ask him. Why one-third?
I'm going to do that. Unfortunately, this is the tyranny of time. I've run out of time in this discussion. But obviously, there's a rethink from taking no decision or defending price rise. No, Mr. Vasa, I've unfortunately run out of time. We're going to debate this further also. Now the government has started to think that obviously it is going to pinch them electorally. But it had started pinching the people a long, long time ago. Thank you very much to all our political panelists. Let's quickly move on now to story number two. We're waiting for the big billion day, that is 1 billion doses. I have with me the All India Institute of Medical Sciences Director, Dr. Randeep Guleria. Dr. Guleria, that is going to be a day of great celebration when India will celebrate and should rightfully do so its billionth dose. It may happen on Tuesday, it may happen on Wednesday. Right from that day, and I remember at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, you were there, Dr. Harshvardhan was there, Dr. Paul was there when you took the first jab. It's been a long journey. It's been like lots of ups and downs that you have seen, battled one crisis after another. But do you think that we've been... This is a huge achievement. You can't let go of this achievement. After all, 100 crore doses. Huge.
Yes, I think this is a huge achievement, and I think every Indian should be proud of this achievement for multiple reasons. One, of course, is the fact that we are probably the only country in this region that are making our own vaccines. We are not relying on anyone, whether it be Covaxin or Covishield. And now we have Zydus Covi, and we have other vaccines also which are waiting in line from Biologically and from Genovia. So the fact that we are making our own vaccines is a huge achievement. India was manufacturing vaccine in the past, but now that we are actually doing R&D is something which is really remarkable. Secondly is the planning. It has taken a huge effort by a large number of people from the scientists to the policymakers to the bureaucrats to the entire group which was involved in trying to roll out a vaccine strategy for a country as large as ours. And that is a huge step, right from maintaining the cold chain from the manufacturing plant up to the site of delivery, making sure people were able to get onto the platform and then on walk-in registrations, and then a number of other activities which were done, whether it be using the Covin app, whether it be training people. And when we're talking of 1 billion doses, we're also talking of 1 billion syringes and 1 billion needles having been manufactured during this time to really be able to deliver those shots, and at the same time having enough trained manpower to do that across the country and monitor for any acute adverse effect which may have happened. So it's a huge step, and I think something that we should be proud of, and it shows that we have the resilience and the IT technology to be able to do such a thing.
Okay, Dr. Guleria, now obviously we'll celebrate when it happens, but as rational thinking people, as doctors, as scientists, I'm sure you're also prepared for the worst or prepared for the challenges, and there are many challenges. For instance, I'm in Raipur right now in Chhattisgarh, and I can tell you the problem being faced here by the various vaccination centers. Covaxin is a huge problem. Even now, its delivery is a huge problem. Many people who show up are turned away because there is no supply or less supply. Do you feel that the supply management will continue to remain a huge challenge?
So I think with any vaccine program which is of the magnitude that we're seeing, there will always be some supply issues in certain areas. And therefore, and we have two vaccines, so there is going to be a problem as compared to the other. And that is something that will get smoothened out over a period of time. Covaxin manufacturers are also increasing significantly. And
even
that
after
should
10 really months, get. Dr. Guleria?
So that has taken time because this is a vaccine platform which was made in India, and this was being done by an indigenous company. They were having a smaller plant. Now they have a much larger plant. So these are challenging issues that any manufacturing plant will have. And sometimes you know it's not like manufacturing any other product. Vaccines have to go through a lot of testing. They have to be safe. They have to go through a lot of validation. And sometimes you may have a batch which may not meet the standards, and then again you have to really sort of discard that batch and have a new batch available. So lots of challenges have been there. And like I said, this has been a journey which has been tough, but really very sort of heartening. And we still have miles to go. I do agree with that. We still have a large number of people we still need to vaccinate, address a number of issues, which also include vaccine hesitancy and trying to get the right doses to everyone, especially those who are not able to come to the vaccination site. So trying to deliver vaccination at their doorsteps is another important thing that we need to do.
Dr. Guleria, you know, I noticed another thing here in Chhattisgarh. And this goes beyond vaccine hesitancy. It could aim towards a vaccine complacency or people just being plain lazy. Would just like to share some figures, and I'm sure you must be aware of certain figures from other states also. So healthcare workers in Chhattisgarh have a 91% achievement, which means 91% of the healthcare workers in Chhattisgarh have got the first dose. That percentage of dose 2 is only 85%. For the frontline workers, 100% frontline workers have got their first dose. But of those who got their second dose is only 80%, a whopping 20% dip. And this just continues as far as 45 plus is concerned, 18 to 44 is concerned. I mean, do you feel that this, unfortunately, is also going to be a big challenge to convince people to come again and take the second dose?
So there are two parts of this. One part is that the it may not be a hesitancy, but remember for Covishield, the second dose is after 12 weeks. So it's possible that you may have some people who are still waiting for those 12 weeks, and that is why there may be a discrepancy in those who have
not got. No, Dr. Guleria, I was talking about complacency.
Yes. So I'm coming to that.
I was talking about complacency. See, because for healthcare workers and frontline workers, their vaccination began in the month of January. So there in, and this is just the example of one state, I'm sure you would be privy to greater information, for there to be a 20% dip between first dose and second dose is clearly, complacency.
So it could be complacency, but also let me also come out with certain other information that in many states and in many hospitals, there is a group of frontline workers, healthcare workers, that actually waited for a few months to see how things are before they actually took the vaccine. This was part of vaccine hesitancy, which we saw in the early months, because people were worried that, you know, maybe this has significant side effects. Some people said it has long-term side effects. I would like to see what happens 6 months from now, and then I'd be comfortable in taking the shot, because we know of side effects only for the first 2 months. We don't know what the side effects are after 6 months. And then there were a lot of things on social media regarding clotting, regarding infertility. And therefore, that also drove vaccine hesitancy to a large extent. And unfortunately, that was also seen in healthcare workers and frontline workers. But I'm quite confident that now with so many people getting the vaccine and coming out, it should get addressed. Having said that, I think there is still issues of people feeling that now COVID is gone and therefore they don't need to take the next shot. So I do agree that type of belief is also there. I talk to many patients and they will say, I've taken one shot. Ab to COVID hai nahi, to isliye ab dusre shot ki kya zarurat hai? And it takes a lot of convincing for them to understand
that
they have to take the second shot. So that is also an issue.
I think that's really what it is, because we spoke to a lot of doctors here and they said exactly this, that because there is no COVID around, the second wave is over, people just feel that it's behind us. And do you think this is going to be the big challenge to convince people that don't take this lightly. The virus is still out there.
I totally agree. I think it's very important for people to understand that we shouldn't make the mistakes that we made in the past. That the lull doesn't mean that we are not going to have a storm. And we can really have a huge surge in the number of cases. And what we know is that vaccines are one way that we can protect ourselves, and they will really help us in terms of not having severe disease, hospitalization or death. And that data is there, not only from our country, but from the Western world also, as far as even the Delta variant is concerned. Therefore, I think it needs a lot of push, and I would say we need to address this seriously so that people understand that one shot is not enough. COVID has not gone away. You must take both your shots, because then only are you truly protected against the viral infection. And you can still have a surge in the number of cases, especially during the festive month. And that is why both vaccination and COVID appropriate behavior still continue to be important. We are still not out of the woods.
Dr. Guleria, beyond the obvious, from what we have gathered, vaccine hesitancy, complacency, is there anything else that is on your mind which you feel is weighing on the top of, the minds of policymakers, that while we complete 1 billion, here are the three or four or five things we have to ensure have to be fixed to avoid a second wave sort of a situation, as far as vaccination is concerned?
Yeah, so as far as vaccination is concerned, I think the important issue is that we must realize that irrespective of whom we vaccinate, and now we're going to have vaccine which will be available for children also, we must prioritize to and make sure that we vaccinate those who are at a high risk of having severe disease. And that includes elderly who may have got left out from the vaccination program because of the fact that they could not come to the vaccination site or were not aware, or were disabled to some extent and therefore were not able to come out and get themselves vaccinated. So I think the important issue here is to really try and identify those who are at high risk and reach out to them. And even if it's a door-to-door campaign, we need to really make sure that all of these individuals are vaccinated, irrespective of whether they're children or adults or elderly, because they are the group which are actually the most vulnerable. So the high-risk group, the elderly, those with comorbidities, children with comorbidities, are the ones that we need to prioritize. Because for others, the vaccination is important, but for them, the mortality will only come down if you vaccinate the high-risk groups.
Dr. Guleria, it's interesting that you spoke about the vaccine for kids. Now, that's also a co-vaccine. And Covaxin, as we discussed, has supply issues right now. They're trying to fix it, but there is a problem. What makes you so confident that we will not end up in a situation where on paper we'll have a vaccine for kids, but we may have a supply-related issue as far as this version of Covaxin as well for children? How do you deal with this?
So two things. One is I'm confident that the Covaxin issue is just a temporary thing because they have now new plants and there is a collaboration with a lot of manufacturers. So that should not be a problem. Secondly, even the ZyCoV-D has been approved for children. And therefore, we have two vaccines which have been approved for children, the Zydus Cadila vaccine and Bharat Biotech vaccine. So I feel that we would have enough shots for giving children, but I again, like I said in the beginning, we should focus on the high-risk group to begin with, and that includes children also. And for that, I think we should have enough doses. As we see, there is actually currently we don't hear of vaccine shortage from any part of the country. Enough doses are available across the country. It's now an issue of trying to get people to come forward and get themselves vaccinated so that we can achieve our target as early as possible.
Dr. Guleria, you say that there is no vaccine shortage, but I have an example right here in Raipur, and of course from other parts also where you do have shortage. Maybe you, as you said, that this could be a temporary feature. Anyway, my final question to you, Dr. Guleria, I'm not taking away, and that is why I'm going to started the interview on a high. We'll end it on a high as well. 1 billion doses is an achievement. Who do you think this should be dedicated to?
We should dedicate it to all those individuals who have come out and vaccinated this huge number. So our vaccinators, whether it be the person in rural India, in urban India, they have really taken this on their shoulders that they will vaccinate 1 billion people. We have the manufacturers who made the vaccine, but the delivery part, the vaccinators did their part and they were so enthusiastic. You go to any vaccination site, you see the enthusiasm that they have in trying to vaccinate as many people as they can in their centers. So I think that's a huge effort that they've done. And this is also, I think, an effort of everyone it's a team effort, and I think everyone in the team has played a crucial role in getting the vaccine manufactured, and then from the manufacturing plant, reaching the site, and then getting it, giving it to so many people, 1 billion people. It's no small task in my mind.
Dr. Guleria, what are you planning to do on that big billion day? Maybe tomorrow, maybe day after. What will you do?
So I think like every other Indian, we'll celebrate this and be very feel very proud of the fact that we've really achieved the 1 billion mark. And I'll think back of the first day when we all got vaccinated in January and really look at this journey that we've had from 0 to 1 billion.
Absolutely. Congratulations to you and the many others who made this possible. It came with its fair share of problems, but the point is it has happened. This day has also come, and hopefully things will get better. Dr. Guleria, thank you so much. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we are stopping for a short break at this moment. When we come back, we'll actually take you to one such vaccination center in Raipur, where we are, where we'll discuss what exactly was the number one problem and number two, the big challenges for the future. Because yes, while it is important to celebrate and it is very important to celebrate, it's equally important to also know and be aware of the challenges. We can't drown the challenges in the celebration. We'll be back on Left, Right and Center after a short break. So we are at the Bhimrao Ambedkar Hospital here in Raipur in Chhattisgarh, where obviously there is a preparation for the big billion day, the big bang day when India will complete 1 billion vaccines. The pace of vaccination at this moment, like most places in Chhattisgarh, is not as fast as one saw a few months ago, where especially those big days when 2.5 crores a day vaccinations happened. But it is slow and steady. That's the first point of check. You can see that all the documents are checked right here, and then people are sent in. Let's come in, and you can see that they are seated here. Their details are checked, and then after that, they're administered the vaccine. Then the COVID certificate is generated from these portals, these terminals that have been stationed right here, and people are then asked to wait. Now, there are many who have come here for the first dose, some have come here for the second dose. Yahan ka jo pura sanchalan ho raha hai, kis tarike se, uske bare mein agar aap thoda batana chahein, अभी तो 1 बिलियन डोजेस की बात हो रही है 100 करोड़ डोज लगने की बात हो रही है यहां पर लेकिन मैं देख रहा हूं कुर्सियां बहुत सारी खाली हैं इसके मायने क्या निकाले जाएं लोग कम आ रहे हैं या लग चुका जिनको लगना था
सर अभी लोग फिलहाल त्योहारों के कारण काफी कम आ रहे हैं प्लस हमारे पास अभी कोवैक्सीन की डोजेस अवेलेबल नहीं है काफी समय से सिर्फ कोविशील्ड की डोजेस ही है तो जिनका अभी ड्यू डेट है या जो कुछ बच गए हैं फर्स्ट डोजेस के लिए सिर्फ वही लोग आ रहे हैं सर
मतलब जो कोवैक्सीन का अगर किसी को ड्यू है तो आप उनको नहीं लगा पा रहे यहाँ पर
सर हमारे पास वैक्सीन अवेलेबल नहीं है अभी पिछले एक हफ्ते से हमारे पास कोवैक्सीन की डोजेस नहीं आई हैं
तो जिन लोगों की डेट ड्यू हो गई वो उनको इंतजार करना पड़ रहा है
जी सर उनको इंतजार करने के लिए बोल रहे हैं हम ऐसा आश्वासन दे रहे हैं कि 2 से 4 दिन के अंदर वैक्सीन आ जाएगी अवेलेबल हो जाएगी उसके बाद उनको लगाने की प्रक्रिया चालू की जाएगी
कोविशील्ड में कोई दिक्कत नहीं
नहीं सर कोविशील्ड में कोई दिक्कत नहीं है
द रियल चैलेंज व्हिच इज नॉट जस्ट छत्तीसगढ़'s चैलेंज But the challenge all over the country seems to be these figures that are there right in my hand. Now, it's very important to look at this figure because this is for Chhattisgarh. The healthcare workers who have been vaccinated with the first dose are 91% in Chhattisgarh. So it's not a complete 100%, but 91% have been vaccinated. With the second dose, that figure is at 85%. Obviously, it's lower than dose one, which means that there is a bit of vaccine complacency among healthcare workers as well. And this is a national challenge. Take a look at the frontline workers. The first dose, 100% vaccinated in Chhattisgarh. But take a look how the second dose, in the second dose, there is a dramatic decline to 80%, 20% dropout. So that means there are many frontline workers, 20% of whom have not taken their second dose. Then you look at the figures of the 45 years and above, that's only 85% covered right now with first dose. For the second dose, it's only 55%. From 18 to 44, 63% coverage for the first dose. And for 18 to 44, the second dose is only 31%. So the total is about 2 crores in a state which has a population of about 3. But the point is, the dropout is going to be the big cause of concern. Or either this can be read as dropout or complacency, or this can also be seen as dates due, that people have they've not reached that date where they're supposed to take their second dose. So it can mean either of the things. But doctors across the country have warned that there is a certain degree of vaccine complacency that has set in, and that is going to be the big challenge as the country prepares for its billionth dose. In Raipur with Ashwini, Sanket Upadhyay for NDTV.